right. Jimmy Clanton from 1960 with Wait. And hey, you don't have to wait anymore because on the other end of this phone, I have Jimmy Clanton. Hi, Jimmy.
Hello, my friend. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too.
Thank you.
I want to just thank you for spending some time with us on Remember Then Radio this evening. And hey, how's the weather in Pennsylvania?
You know, the weather here in southern Lancaster County, I must admit, it's absolutely gorgeous. It just couldn't be prettier. It really couldn't. Unless I was down on the swamps of my home state, Louisiana.
Yeah, it'd be a little warmer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It would be. And there'd probably be a few mosquitoes, which I don't see around here. That's a long story. But I'm still a Louisiana boy at heart. But I live up here now. It's kind of a long story. Anyhow, moving right on along.
You know, I have people that have written me questions during the week, so I'm going to try to ask you as many questions as I've received myself, okay? First of all, Jimmy Clanton was born where?
Well, I grew up in Baton Rouge, but I actually was born down in Cutoff, Louisiana. That's where my Creole mom was from. And that's where I was born. I stayed there just a few months, and my dad was transferred to a pipeline company in Alabama, and we were there for a few years, and then moved back because of his job to Baton Rouge, which was where I actually grew up and was there until I went out on my own and traveled all over the country. But I was actually born way down here in the bayou, Louisiana. Yep.
Yeah, right. Where did you begin singing, Jimmy?
Actually, I was raised in Baton Rouge, but my dad was from Alabama, and I would go summer vacations over to Alabama, in Coffeyville, Alabama, where my dad was from, and all my aunts and uncles and cousins. And really, they started taking me on Sunday morning. They all went to church, a little Baptist church, and the next thing you know, I'm singing from a hymnal. The next thing you know, somebody found an old guitar around the house and taught me three little guitar chords. And once they did that, I was hooked. So by the time I would come back to Baton Rouge to go back to school, I saved up $12, went to a pawn shop, bought myself a guitar, bought a 35-cent guitar chord book, taught myself guitar chords to where I could play along with songs on the radio, and it just went from there. Eventually, by the time I was 16, I was in a little band in Baton Rouge, and by the time I was 18, I was in a major group called the Rockets, and we were playing all the nightclubs all along the Gulf Coast, and that's how I got started.
Wow. Now, I've also been asked, has Jimmy Clanton written any of his many hit records?
You know, actually, I wrote many, many of the songs I recorded. Most of my early recordings, right up until 1960, I actually wrote them all myself. I wrote Just a Dream. I wrote a lot of the B-sides. I didn't write, I wrote A Letter to an Angel. I wrote A Part of Me. I wrote a song that has become a big favorite on the Facebook called If I.
Oh, yeah.
That was the other side of a song I wrote, Highway Bound. I wrote a lot of the songs I recorded. I actually did.
What about some of your mentors, the people that you looked up to when you were a fledgling star?
Well, actually, being from down there in Louisiana, I was around rhythm and blues, around mostly the black artists of the day, Fats Domino, the early days of Ray Charles, and I got a hold of the early Clyde McFadder records and Smiley Lewis and Chuck Willis. These were black artists that I really, really loved their kind of music and emulated a lot of their music and wanted to be a guitar player more than I wanted to be a singer. It just worked out that way, but I found out if you sang, you got $5 a night extra.
Yeah.
So I went from making $15 to $18 a night. I was making $25 a night. So that's how I started the singing part. I really did not start out as a singer, but that just kind of gradually became greater and greater. And as I did more and more engagements with the band, I became more and more popular myself as one of the singers. And that's how it all started before making records.
Now, what about a song called "That's You, Baby" in 1957?
Yeah, I wrote that. That was kind of like, you know, the Louisiana sound that we all played music around. We all had these same kind of chord changes, and we wrote songs around that. We really didn't know anything about doo-wop. We didn't know what was going on in New York or Philadelphia, Chicago. We were just in our own cocoon of the Louisiana Gulf Shore music, and so the New Orleans sound, you know. So that's what I grew up with. That's the kind of music I wrote until as I got older and got exposed to more and more music, and then I gradually expanded the borders of my own songwriting as well as singing.
All right, now "That's You, Baby," was that your first side at Ace?
I don't remember if it was the first side, but it was probably, I think it was like the second or third side at the most. I know the first side was "Just a Dream" that I wrote, and I don't remember the B-side of "Just a Dream," but I wrote that. And then I wrote "A Letter to an Angel." I wrote that. I wrote "A Part of Me." I wrote a song called "I Trusted You." The first three, or the first four Ace records, if I'm not mistaken, that I recorded, the first four songs that I recorded, both A and B side, I wrote them all, and I did write "That You, Baby," yes.
"You Aim to Please" was the flip side of "Just a Dream."
Okay, I wrote that, yes.
All right. Now, I understand that you were discovered because not only did you look good, but you could sing. And when you were discovered by Ace Records, they felt that, wow, we've got ourselves a big star on our hands. So they got you into the studio, and of course, as you said, you put those sides down. And then you came out with a little song in 1958 that seemed to put Jimmy Clanton on everybody's lips for quite a while, and that was "Just a Dream."
Well, that there's no question that was the song that did it. And ironically, Ace Records, they were so taken with that song themselves that in April of 1958, when the song was just coming out, I got a call from him, and he said, "I am sending you to Philadelphia. I've got you an appearance on a brand new dance show that's become popular all over America, Jimmy, called American Bandstand." Well, I'd heard of it, but we didn't have a TV. And I'd heard of it, and I said, well, wow, I'd never been on an airplane, never been out of Louisiana, Mississippi, or right there in the Gulf Coast. And ironically, they flew me up to Philadelphia, and it was kind of funny for me because, you know, in those days you didn't have a photocopy machine, so the only way to get a copy of a picture of what you look like, you had to do it by mail, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so by the time I showed up at American Bandstand to lip sync, they didn't know what I looked like, and so I walked out there, and lo and behold, I found out real fast that I was very well received by the girls, and I thought, yeah, well, what's this all about, you know? And the next thing you know, the song is like all over America, and boy, it was a rocket ship of a career right then and there from that day on.
Yeah, I mean, and many, many hit records followed up the charts. "A Part of Me," that was another big hit for you. The song "Ship on a Stormy Sea," That song, I understand. I read, and I don't know if this is true or not, so you verify this for me, that song, actually, you received a gold record for Ship on a Stormy Sea?
You know what? I've got gold records, and I don't remember exactly all of that part, but I do remember that after I got to New York and Dick, of course, Dick Clark, I did so many shows with him. I did so many bus tours with him. And then when Alan Freed saw how popular I'd become, he got in touch with me, and the next thing you know, I'm doing shows with him, and he and I just became very, very good friends. And Alan Freed was, of course, the man that really started the rock and roll, you know, in Cleveland, Ohio, and then he came over to New York, and I did all the big shows with him. And my point is that he came up to me one day after a big show, and he said, "I want you to play the lead in a movie I'm going to produce called Go, Johnny, Go. I want you to play Johnny Melody." And so I was very, very flattered that he would offer me the lead part in that movie. And it just so happened, of course, that when I went out there, that Ship on a Stormy Sea was one of the major songs that I performed in that movie.
Wow. I tell you, let's you and I take a slight break here right now, and let's play Ship on a Stormy Sea.
Okay.
All right, here is Jimmy Clanton with Ship on a Stormy Sea.
The love you gave me was what I need, but now it seems to fade from me. Now this love, like a ship, in a stormy sea,
a stormy sea.
A gypsy woman, she read my palm. She said soon that you'd be gone. Yes, I'm sinking like a ship, oh yeah, in a stormy sea,
a stormy sea.
Ship of love has sailed till now. Didn't take no chances, sunk anyhow. Threw my love like a ship, oh yeah, in a stormy sea,
a stormy sea.
Ship of love has sailed till now. Didn't take no chances, sunk anyhow. Threw my love like a ship, oh yeah, in a stormy sea,
a stormy sea.
All right, we are back.
4,000 people on Facebook
now. All right, Jimmy, we're back. And we are talking, while you were being entertained with Ship on a Stormy Sea, we're talking about a couple of tunes that Jimmy has recorded, well, I'm going to say recently. Well, Old Rock and Roller was actually not recently. I guess it was 76, but that is... Tell me what brought that song to mind.
That is the most interesting song, because by 1976, we were really in a holding pattern when it comes to doo-wop. In 76, the heavy metal was so very, very popular, and radio stations didn't want to play the 50s artist. But this guy from Nashville sent me the song. And at that time, the words would sound like a guy who had just been in music, and now the public has turned their back on him, and the radio mm-hmm. stations turned their back on him. And so now he's living his life in a time zone of Fantasy Island, because it sounds like the song is about a guy that's just all, you know, it's never going to happen again, and he just kind of goes through the motions of wishing it had. And I fell in love with the song. I really did. And so I said, you know what, I'd like to come to Nashville and record it. And so I did. So the song just really pretty much stayed on my own shelf for years and years and years. And then about 4 years ago, out of the clear blue, through some interviews, I presented it. And the DJs went crazy over it. The people loved it. I started playing it on Facebook, and everybody on Facebook just absolutely loves old rock and roller. So it's as popular a Jimmy Clinton song with my fans as just about anything I've ever done.
Well, it's a great tune because it is.
Thank you.
It's a story from start to finish. Really,
yes, it is.
Really, really, really like it. As I do, Everybody Needs Love from your current CD.
Oh, thank you. And, yeah, I love that. That's the reason I titled my CD, Everybody Needs Love, because that song represents so much of my love of music, and it represents the kind of songwriting that I enjoy doing. I just have so much fulfillment of writing my own songs that I record. It's just that much more fulfilling for me. I don't know how else to put it.
And that's your granddaughter in the background.
Yes, it is.
That is so cool. That is so nice. Now, you, of course, I seen your picture in the on Facebook this week on Veterans Day. Congratulations for being a veteran. I'm a veteran myself.
Uh-huh.
And you spent how long in the military?
Well, I was in for a full term, but I didn't. I never had to go out of the country. Ironically, I did basic training and other training at Fort Leonardwood, Missouri, and then I was transferred to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and that actually was where I ended up until I was discharged. So. I never had to leave the States.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No.
wrong with that. Now, when you came out of the military, I believe, is that when you recorded Venus in Blue Jeans?
No, that's an interesting story. I had actually recorded that song with two others before I ever had to go into the service.
Oh, really?
So it was actually, as we call it, in the can for over a year to a year and a half. That's amazing, because all of us who were in the business, nobody would have ever thought that you could have a song recorded that far back that would still catch the public eye, you know, that much later, so to speak.
Wow.
But I think the good Lord wanted me back into the public eye, because that song, without any question, grabbed audiences worldwide faster than Just a Dream.
Yeah, that was a huge record.
I remember
when that came out. Yes. And now you're saying that you recorded that a couple years before that, and Venus in Blue Jeans, 1962. It was
That's
a
correct.
Hit record.
So I recorded it like in late 1960.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing.
Wow. Okay. Now, let's talk about some of the other ones, okay?
Okay.
I really enjoy playing both sides of this record, My Own True Love and Little Boy in Love.
Yes.
I
wrote Little Boy in Love, and I always loved Gone with the Wind, and I always loved the melody of Terror's Theme.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found words to it, and I just went into the studio, and I said, you know what? I've become known as a love song singer. I love to sing love songs, and this is the epitome of a love song. And so Johnny Vins at Ace Records said, "Well, if you want to, if you feel like it," I said, "I do." And it was a tremendous song for me. And wherever I go, when I do live shows, my up close and personal show, when I do that song, I tell you, especially the ladies, they love that song, and I love to sing it.
Yeah, it's a great tune. So actually, you recorded that song before the Duprees did.
Oh yes, very much so. Quite a while before them. Yes.
All right, and then. Another one of my favorites, Another Sleepless Night. I mean, there's a song about agony, and wow.
I loved that song, and the way that came about, I was backstage at a performance, and this guy comes over, and he said, "Jimmy," he said, "I love Just a Dream," and he said, I wrote a song for you after I heard Just a Dream." And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go. Somebody wants to push a song on me. And he kept pushing it a little bit, and there was a piano over at the side of the stage. He said, "Here, let me just play a little bit of it." And I went, oh boy, okay. Well, he played some of it, and I went, wow, I loved it. And so I said, you know what, I've got to admit, I love this song. So I did record it, and of course the guy that wrote it, that was pushing it backstage on me, was a fellow by the name of Neil Sedaka.
I heard of him. He had a couple of records back in the day, didn't he?
So Neil wrote that for me, and I always loved that song.
Wow.
That's
a great story.
Thank you.
And then Come Back in 1960. That was also, you sounding really, really great, I think, on that tune, on Come Back.
Thank you. By that time, also, I had started recording in New York. And the record, recording studios were just incredibly getting better and better all over America and in New York. The quality of recording, the quality of the equipment. And so I loved that song, and I loved the feel of it. And I felt like that I was in good voice that day. And, of course, that recording studio just did, I felt such a good, great job on it. And so I really enjoyed doing Come Back.
Yeah, great, great tune.
Thank you.
What Am I Gonna Do? There's another one.
There's another one. Neil, after I recorded all Another Sleepless Night, of course, anytime Neil would say, "I've got a song for you," well, I was ready to listen. And, of course, I recorded What Am I Gonna Do? And I loved it. But I recorded on the B-side of that a song I wrote that also has become extremely popular with all my fans on Facebook, called If I.
Yeah.
And that was the B-side of What Am I Gonna Do?
Yeah, I played that earlier this evening.
Did you?
Yeah, it's great.
I like that song too. So
it's a great tune.
Thank
and then
you.
You were in the movies, of course, and you did a tune with Marianne Mobley. And that tune was called Down the Aisle in 1961. Cute.
That is correct.
Cute song.
Now, that was not from the movie I did, but I did a duet with Marianne.
Right.
That's correct. I did.
Now, there's another fella by the name of Clanton that also had a hit with that song.
Well, I didn't. Was it the very same song?
Ike
Clanton.
Well, I knew that I could record it, but I didn't know it was the very same song, to be honest with you.
Well, according to Joel Whitburn's record research book,
he would know. Okay.
He said it's the same song, and you did it as a as a duet.
Well, I knew, you know, Ike had recorded several songs, but he and I were so on opposite sides of the universe as far as our careers, you know.
Yeah.
I was traveling all over and in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, and I didn't keep up with him, and he didn't keep up.
Yeah, well, it's easy to get sidetracked when you're on the road a lot, huh?
And I've been asked about Ike. Sadly, my brother Ike passed away about 6 years ago.
Oh, very sorry to hear that, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about the traveling? Did that did that take a toll on you, or did you enjoy it?
Well, the traveling back in that day, you know, you're 19, 20, 21 years of age, you're full of life, and you're free, and just got all the energy in the world, and the traveling wasn't really so bad. It was really the longevity. I mean, you know, I would go on a four-week tour, a bus tour every night, a different city. I'd have a week off, and then I'd go on a seven-week tour. Because people have to realize in that day, in 57, 58, 59, if you really think about it, AM radio was the only thing for radio.
Right, right.
No internet, no TV, no American Idol, no Voice, no contest, no nothing. And so my point is there were only about 8 record companies in the world, and there were only about 50 of us artists that were well-known worldwide in the world. And so because of that, our records were the only ones that were played.
Mm-hmm.
So when we would get to big towns with the big shows, the whole cities would shut down because here we were. You know, we were bigger than music. We were bigger than movies, bigger than sports. It was the entertainment. You know, TV had not taken off. Radio and records and music was it. And so when we showed up in a town, that was it. It was really phenomenal. It really wasn't until later years that the traveling got harder because the increased population and then, of course, security with airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so traveling in the last 12, 15 years has really been the hardest thing to deal with of all.
Now, did you travel with the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars also?
Oh, I did many of those.
All right,
yes,
because
we did, oh my gosh, I can't count how many I did nationwide.
Well, I can tell you one that you did.
Every one of those, it would be different artists on one. There would be me and Brian Hyland and the Times and the Mystics, and then on another one it would be me and Carl Perkins and Lloyd Price, and
mm-hmm.
then on another one it would be me and the Fleetwoods and the Coasters, and so that was the kind of thing, and I did multiple numbers of Dick Clark Caravan of Star shows. Yes, indeed.
Well, I saw you, I believe it was in 1959 in Rochester, New York, at the Rochester War Memorial, Dick Clark Caravan of Stars, and Lloyd Price and his orchestra supplied the background music.
Well, I'll bet you my executive associate, Sandy Weeks, was at that one because she was from up there. So I guarantee you, if I was on a show in Rochester in 1959, she was there. You can believe that.
Yeah, I remember you being there because I remember all the girls screaming, of course, and Dwayne Eddy was on the program, Lloyd Price, yourself.
Yes.
I believe that Paul Anka was even at that show.
Okay, did a lot of tours with Paul.
So there was a lot of stars that were on that Dick Clark Caravan of Stars, and it was quality entertainment. And I mean, you got to see, like you're saying, you got to see the biggest stars of the day together on one stage. That was fantastic.
That is true. That's the way it was in that time. It sure was.
Wow. Now, one of my favorite songs of yours, and I think we talked about this the last time that I spoke with you, I love Curly.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting that you said that, because just recently at a big show, a guy came up to me afterward. He said, Jimmy, he said, I'm from Fresno, California. And he said, Curly was number one for 8 weeks in a row.
Wow.
He said everybody in that town loved Curly. And I always thought, well, that was interesting because, you know, it just never really became as big as Just a Dream or Go Jimmy Go or Venus in Blue Jeans or Another Sleepless Night.
But it sure was
big in Fresno, I know that.
Yeah, and it was on Lori Records.
Yes, that's correct.
And actually was your last charted hit on the Billboard Hot 100. And Jimmy, I love it. I love it. I could play that song. I'm telling you, I could play that song over and over again.
A lot of people have mentioned Curly to me, as I've, and they even said that it's very valuable in its original condition if you find one. The guy, this one guy came and he said, Jimmy, I found it. He said, I bought it. I think it was either $35 or $50 for a 45.
Wow.
Yeah, of Curly. Yep.
Now, I also enjoy listening to another number of yours called Matilda.
Ah, yes.
What can you tell me about that one?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, when I went on Phillips Records, I went to Nashville, and I did an album. And I had all the Nashville players. Ray Stevens was there, and what was that horn player? Golly, I can't think of his name on tenor sax. He was so well known down there, and great players. And so we were talking about different songs. I said, "Well, there's one song that was the national anthem of the Gulf Coast," and they said, "What's that?" I said, "A song called Matilda," and they said, "Well, would you like to do it?" I said, "You know, I'd like to do it." In fact, not too long ago, I played it from YouTube on my Facebook fan page, and everybody loves that too. So that's one of the favorite songs that Jimmy recorded. That I was not the original one who did it, but everybody loves that version that I did of Matilda. Yep.
Yeah, that is really really cute.
Thank you.
Now you also spent some time on the other end of the microphone as a disc jockey.
Well, the way that came about, I was living in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, back in the late 70s, and most of the shows I was just doing within a close proximity, Baltimore and Washington, and I'd go up to upstate PA and over to New York. So I did most of my traveling by car. So a friend of mine called me, and he said, and he knew that, and he said, you know, there's a station that's just been taken over. They've changed the format to the oldies, 50s and 60s. Would you ever consider just doing like an hour program in the morning that would give you the free time to go and come as you please in the afternoon? So I said, you know, I think I'll do that. That'll be fun. So I did it for a while, and I called a couple of my friends. I called Frankie Avalon and Brenda Lee, and they did personal interviews with me on that show. So I did that for a little over a year. That's true.
Wow. Hey, that's very, very interesting. So you've been on both ends of the microphone, the one in the studio and the one in another studio. Yeah. Now, is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to, is it semi-retire next year, or what is it? Are you?
What I've said is that I guess the way the whole thing started is I made an announcement. I'd written a song about 5 years ago now, off the top of my head, called Lovin' Louisiana.
Yeah, that's on the new album, right?
Yes, and the reason I wrote that, I was getting ready to do a live show at a big casino in New Orleans. And I was in my living room, and I just had the thought. I said, you know, if I was getting ready to do my very last show, because, you know, I was in my 70s by then. You know, and I thought, where would I want it to be? And I said, you know, I really want it to be in Louisiana, my up-close and personal show. So I wrote a song, and I ended up singing it live. Well, the people went crazy over it. They just absolutely wanted to know if I was ever going to put it out, and that's how I ended up recording it and putting it in my CD, Everybody Needs Love, which, by the way, if anybody's interested in it, it can be gotten over my website, jimmyclanton.com. Just go to jimmyclanton.com and you can get Everybody Needs Love. So I sang that song, and in the back of my mind, I thought, is that ever going to happen? You know, when is that going to happen? Well, I turned 75 this past summer, and even though I'm in good shape and I feel my voice is as good as ever, whatever that means, and, I'm still feeling well, and I thought, you know what? I think what I want to do is I want to do, while I'm still in my prime, I want to do my up-close-and-personal one-man show. But I think I want it to be a farewell show because I'm only going to do it one time. I may do shows with multiple artists, but I'm not going to do another up-close-and-personal one-man show.
All right.
Like what I'm going to do May the 31st. In Raceland, Louisiana. I picked out that little town because it's in close proximity to all of the areas that I grew up in. I played in all those nightclubs in Opelousas and Lafayette, Thibodeau, Raceland, Houma, down there in Cutoff, down there in Golden Meadow, down there in New Orleans. So all of those areas down there represent where I started out 55 years ago. So I went ahead and announced I'm going to do my goodbye farewell once and only up close and personal one-man show. But I'm not retiring from music. I'm just going to not. That's going to be all right. My last one-man show down there on the Gulf Coast.
Okay.
And I've got shows actually into October of 2014 already. So I know I'll be performing through 2014. Mm-hmm. And really after that, going into 2015, I just want to wait and see.
Sure.
I say this very humbly, and I say this in love. I know some big, big names. I know everybody. I've done shows with everybody. And there's some of them, they go on stage, and I don't know for what reason, but I am not going to go on stage if I don't have the voice that I feel the fans would want to hear. I'm just not going to do that.
I hear
you. And so right now I have it. Hopefully I'll have it in 2014. But, you know, if things change in 2015, I am not going to go out and perform less than my very, very best. So that's the best way to put it, okay?
Well, I respect you for that. Now, if anybody wants to know, anybody that's listening to the show, because, Jimmy, tonight we have people from all over the world listening to the show.
Well, thank you.
If anybody wants to know where you're going to be performing, now they can go to your webpage or to your Facebook page and find out?
They can find it on my Facebook page. They can also find it on my website. I keep my schedule up on my website as well. And if worse comes to worse, people, you can call my office.
Or they could call me right here at the station. Oh. Sure, and I'll tell them where you're going to be.
But I do want to say this to people for what it's worth. I'm at my prime right now. I don't think I've ever sung better in my life. I say that very humbly. So if you're a JC fan, for heaven's sake, try to come see me now at my prime, because that's the way I would want you to see me, and that's the way you want to remember me. And so if you've ever been a fan and you've ever desired to see Jimmy live, every show I play now, I say from the stage, is there anybody here? You've loved me, you've liked me all these years, and this is the first time you've ever seen me perform live. Would you raise your hand? And I'm telling you, people all over audiences raise their hands and they're in tears, and I always make time for them back at the end of the show, and they get hugs, they get kisses on the cheek, they get pictures, and they get time to spend spend with me. I make time for my fans.
I see
at
that.
Every show.
I see.
Every
that.
Show, fans have time for me and with me. And all they got to do, if you go to Facebook, you'll see at the top of my timeline, all of those pictures are me and fans.
Yes, I just seen them.
Of all the different shows where I have taken pictures with them. So come see me while I'm in my prime, you all.
And as a further note, I can attest to this, that Jimmy's latest CD is definitely in fine voice. You have never sounded better.
Thank you, Joe. I'm so proud of Everybody Needs Love. I really feel that the best that I can possibly be, that was indeed that CD, Everybody Needs Love, yeah.
And there's videos, too. If people can't make it to the show, there's videos that they could purchase, too, to see you in action.
That's very true. In fact, yeah. On JimmyClanton.com, I put together a couple of different shows, and it actually is a DVD of Jimmy live in concert.
Wow.
No question about it. But that cannot take the place of coming to my show.
That's
live,
right.
Because when you see me up close and personal, I sing to you, I give you hugs. I mean, I give my audience all the love that Jimmy Clanton has, and they receive it, they know it, they obtain it at my shows. Just ask anybody that's come to my live show, and they'll tell you that. So I love to perform for fans. I love my fans, and I enjoy giving them the best that I can.
Well, Jimmy, you certainly do. And
thank you so much.
You have since, the late 50s. Jimmy Clanton has been here with us.
And I appreciate the fact that fans over these 55 years are still with me. There's so many I could name, one after another. They're just too many to name one-on-one, and it wouldn't be fair, but they know who I'm talking about. And they are just wonderful, and they are true blue fans, and I love them, you know, and I really have appreciated them, and that's why I've loved to do my music. I tell people on Facebook, look, I'm on Facebook for you all. I don't need to do this for myself.
That's
so
right.
I'm not on Facebook for Jimmy. I don't make records for Jimmy. When I do live shows, I don't do it for Jimmy. I do it for fans.
And
it's all about the fans. It always has been.
And you know something? You are one of the very few that actually takes the time to answer your fans and write to your fans on Facebook without somebody else being the writer. I mean, this is actually coming from Jimmy Clanton. So
I appreciate you saying that, because of a few years ago, I don't know what happened, but a rumor got out that my executive associate Sandy Weeks, going on as me, and she was answering comments as me, and I can say right now categorically that is not true. It's never been true. Anything that Sandy has ever put on Facebook, she comes to me first. Nothing is done without my okay, and I comment and I talk and I speak to my fans personally on Facebook. That's me, nobody else.
Yep. And I would personally like to say thank you to Sandy for making the arrangements for this interview and for the first one that we did at the beginning of the year. And again, I just want to say thank you, Jimmy Clanton. Thank you for the music. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you. You know, there are a few of you out there that I know personally that really have kept the music alive and kept fans all over the world involved and in tune with artists like myself. And I know all of us artists appreciate it, and I know the fans do all over the world. So my thanks to you, Joe, from all of us who play the music, who have been in the business. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jimmy. And let's stay in touch, and hey, maybe we'll do this again next year. How about that?
Okay, why don't you play old rock and roller for the fans for me?
You know what? I think I'm going to do that.
Okay,
there we go. All right, good.
There's an old rock and roller who'd love to rock and roll again. He keeps thinking about the time when everything was going for him. He just dreams away about those good old days. And will it happen again? Once it's in the blood, it's so hard letting go. He keeps listening for his voice coming from the radio. He wants a second chance to ask the world to dance. Will it happen again? Will it happen again? When he accepts things just the way they are, there's an old rock and roller who'd love to rock and roll again. He keeps thinking about the time when everything was going for him. He just dreams away those good old days. And will it happen again? Will it happen again?
Hey, there he is. Hey, there he is. Hey, there he is. Hey, there he is.